Welcome back to Around the World. I'm Dylan, and I'm here with Drags. And today, we're joined by a really awesome guest, Zach Zandi, the pride of Philadelphia and Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania. Zach is a product of the Philly Union Academy, one of the most prestigious academies here in America. He then went on to have a really successful four-year career at Villanova, which included the Philly Soccer Six Player of the Year in 2017. And then he went on to sign with Bethlehem Steel, or formerly Bethlehem Steel, now Philly Union 2, and eventually got traded to Colorado Switchbacks, where he's now enjoying a really great season. The Switchbacks are near the top of the division, and he's already got more than 1,000 minutes under his belt. So we're really thankful to have you here, Z. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
Ah, dude, thanks for the introduction. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Definitely. It's our pleasure, man. It's our pleasure. So kicking it off, we've been talking a lot about what's going on here in America and how soccer is evolving, and it's definitely getting better and better. So you grew up in the Philly Union Academy, and that is obviously one of the foremost academies when it comes to developing players. They are producing players that are playing in the MLS, and then even more so over in Europe when you look at the Aaronsons of the world. So can you walk us through what it was like growing up in that environment, which I would imagine is really competitive, and that's looking to produce professional players?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when I started out with the Union, it was a lot different then than it is now. I would say they've kind of perfected everything. And when I was there, they were just kind of starting things up. So I was only able to play for 2 years with them. And prior to that, I was with Penn Fusion in Westchester. But the 2 years that I got were incredible. Just a really professional environment, kind of getting you ready for, you know, what a professional team would be like, kind of, you know, the practices every day. And then the competition obviously was really good. The coaching staff, very educated on the game. So just kind of everything from top to bottom, while they were still improving a lot of things, was really incredible and great for my development. But, you know, you look at it now, they have a school, they have, you know, it used to be a champion USL Championship 2 team, now an MLS Next team. So there's a lot. I would say the pathway is a lot more defined to get to the first team, because you have those, you know, middle steps to train with a professional team and another professional environment and then make your way to the first team. So I'd say the pathway is a lot more clearly defined, but when I was there, just kind of starting, but it was still overall a great experience.
Yeah. That's awesome, Z. And I think, like, as Dylan mentioned, I think when you think about academies in America, I mean, Philly Union's the first one that comes to mind in terms of just, you know, producing talent year in and year out. And from my perspective, you're just another one that they have. But, like, more specifically, so kind of staying on that topic right now. So when you made that switch from Penn Fusion to the Union Academy, kind of what were the biggest, like, I guess, differences, adjustments that you had to make with that transition, and how did it make you a better player, more primed for college?
I think the first thing was, I think with Penn Fusion, we were training 3 nights a week. So it was like Monday, Wednesday, Friday training, versus the Union where it was Monday through Friday. And then obviously games on the weekend. So just kind of that training on a consistent basis in a team environment was, I think, the biggest difference in development and stuff. I mean, I was, on the days that we didn't have training with Penn Fusion, I was doing stuff outside, but it was, you know, one-on-one stuff, individuals and things like that, which is a bit different than, you know, kind of being in this, you know, team environment 5 days a week. So I think that time commitment was great, and it was definitely needed to make that next step. And it was the biggest thing for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And you're talking about making that next step. So you've obviously played at a plethora of different levels, including professionally now, but going back to when you were a little bit younger, you were part of the national team pool. So what was it like being recruited? What did it take to get noticed? And then what was that experience like being part of the national team pool?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't even know if you guys know what ODP is. Did you guys play ODP?
Yeah, back to like U12, man.
It was, yeah, me too, me too. That was definitely yeah, part of it.
Before Academy, you know, ODP was the big thing for, you know, the state players, and then it would, you know, transfer to regional and then obviously national. But kind of all started out with the state program in PA. And when I first tried out, I didn't actually make the first team. I was on the second team. So I had to work my way up, and I was actually playing center back for I made it at center back for the first team, because that was, I guess, the position that I was able to play. And I was one of the smallest guys still at that point, as I am now. So that was kind of ironic, but I did well, with the state team, got to regional team, made it there, still at center back, went to Italy 2 times. So did some trips with the regional team. A lot of quality players on that team, some guys that are still playing professional right now. And then from the regional camp, got selected to go to the first U14 camp for my age group and at center back, which is a bit ridiculous. So, you know, I was able to play in that camp a lot. It was in Massachusetts. It was a really great experience. Like guys like Emerson Heineman, he's the first one that came to my mind that was on at that camp, but a lot of quality players. But, you know, I was playing center back, so probably not my ideal position, but it was still, you know, a great experience. But that's kind of how I got to the, you know, the national team pool. That was my only camp, one and only. So nah, maybe I'll get called back again, but unlikely.
Yeah, hopefully.
I think the future's bright. And honestly, one is still a lot more than a lot of people get. So it's still a cool experience, though.
Yeah, that's for real. That's awesome. That's funny. I never knew about the center back thing, because I just know you as a creative attacking player, obviously. And that kind of leads into my next question. I'm just curious. So when you're younger, what player did you look up to when you were a younger player? What player did you try and model your game after when you were a youngin out there?
You know, I think, so my dad watched a lot of soccer, so I'd watch a lot with him. And, you know, we were kind of watching in the heyday of Barcelona when they had Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, you know, that whole team. So I watched a lot of Barcelona. So I'd say Iniesta was the guy I kind of looked up to, tried to model my game after. Just really, you know, technically clean, savvy with the ball, and, you know, obviously pretty creative as well, and just a world-class player. So I'd say Iniesta for me.
Mm-hmm. I think you're doing a pretty decent job.
not even close, but I'm trying. But I appreciate that.
But anyways, so obviously you went through the Union Academy, you had your national team camp, and then eventually you ended up at Villanova, and you were, for those that don't know, one of the best players in Villanova program history, a guy that is still talked about today within the program. But what was that like transitioning from a somewhat professional environment over at the Union into a college Division I environment?
Yeah, you know, I think I was pretty lucky with being able to be in the Union Academy and kind of the preparation that they had and the quality of players that I had on my team and the Union. Most of those guys went to big, big D1 schools, a lot better than Villanova at the time, and a lot of guys that are still playing professionally to this day. So the competition there was honestly really high, and that prepared me really well for Villanova. I think the biggest adjustment was kind of the condensed nature of the college season, where it's, you know, 20 games in 2 months. And I was a bit unlucky. I came off of having mono. So I missed the entire second half of the academy season. So I kind of came into Nova with very little fitness, and then, you know, struggled with injuries, partly because of that. And then I wasn't entirely mature enough to know how to handle my body. So injuries my freshman and sophomore year were pretty problematic. But, you know, the physical aspect of the college game is also tough. And then just, you know, with the amount of games that you're playing, it makes it so much more difficult. So kind of a combination of all those things made it a difficult transition, but you know, in that time, I think I learned a lot about how to actually be a better pro and kind of prepare myself for you know, after college.
Right. Yeah. Obviously me and Dylan can completely relate to that, that huge adjustment. Yeah. I think it's really not talked about enough just cause I mean, I've been fortunate. I know Dylan's been dealt with some injuries, but you know, you just see your teammates, guys from other teams, just, you know, if you have like a 3-week knock that puts you out, I don't even know, like 25% of the games, which is just crazy. Yeah. And something people, I guess like the outsiders don't really think about, plays into a big part of what the college game is. So you talked about a little bit about your freshman and sophomore season. So what kind of was that, that realization or that hurdle you jumped over, to obviously kind of, have, you know, amazing and from, in terms of Villanova's like history, junior and senior seasons?
I think, you know, it was frustrating being injured, but that was the first time in my career that I had really had sustained injuries for a long time. So I was frustrated. I wanted to figure out like, what can I do to make myself available to be able to play? Because obviously you guys know that injuries are the worst part of the game. You don't want to be just sitting on the sideline. That's no fun. So, you know, I really took a hard look at myself and asked myself, what can I do to, you know, be better? How can I avoid things like this for happening? So that meant, you know, spending a lot of time in the training room, doing a lot of recovery stuff at night. And I would say I really kind of in those freshman, sophomore years learned a lot about my body and how to take care of my body that, you know, have led me to be able to be healthy for the past couple of years. And without, you know, crazy things happening, you know, it's been a good job in how I've done that, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely sobering going to college and realizing that your body does have physical limitations.
Absolutely. I feel like in college, there's kind of a, you know, used to be able to eat whatever you wanted, sleep however much you wanted, all these type of things. And then in college, it starts to, you know, those things start to matter where, you know, what you're eating, you know, maybe you're putting on some weight or, you know, you're not sleeping well and you're feeling like, you know, horrible the next day. So it's those little things that at that age, you kind of change.
I feel like you age like 5 to 10 years, like right when you step on campus. It's so odd, like in terms of like just athletics, like just like trying to play. It's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I still remember when I was a freshman, one of my first interactions at Villanova, Z was in the locker room and he was talking about, man, I have to eat healthy now or I don't feel good the next day. And I was sitting there, I was still a freshman. I was like, dude, what are you talking about? Like, you now I'm sitting here like, man, I better watch what I eat the day before a game. And so, yeah, you learn
quick. Can't be eating Chipotle right before a game. No, it's not going to go over too well.
No, absolutely not. Or, yeah, I mean, you can try, but you'll get exposed.
You're going to be having your stomach's going to be hurt for sure.
Yeah. Well, within that journey that you went on, Z, and obviously your first 2 years were a bit of a struggle, and then your last 2 years were pretty successful. I think for every player at basically any level, there comes a moment where you realize, you know, I can really go pro here, or, you know, maybe the end of the road's coming up and you start looking up, what am I going to do after soccer? So for you, obviously, you were able to carve out a professional career that's still going on right now. So when was that moment for you that you realized, hey, I can really be a professional soccer player? And how did you handle that?
I mean, I think I've always wanted to be a professional soccer player ever since I was a little kid. You know, you do that stuff in elementary school. What do you want to be when you grow up? Like, I think I probably wrote like, I want to be a professional soccer player. Mm-hmm. So I think I always had those aspirations, but I would say, you know, where it really became realistic was probably that U14, U13 age, where I was one of the better players and, you know, I really loved the game and, you know, that thinking professionally was something that I wanted to do. Because I think that's like eighth grade, ninth grade. And by that time I wasn't playing any other sports. It was just soccer. So I think from that point, the focus was, you know, I want to play soccer at whatever level I can, the highest I can do it. So I'd say around the U13, U14 age is when I wanted to do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's awesome. Like, I just think it's, you know, we all, I'm sure I wrote that down as well. when I was a young kid as well. You know, when it's weird how we kind of know, that's kind of what we want to do, at such a young age. But, so more specifically to like college though. So obviously you're getting into your junior, senior year of college. What kind of happened, or was there any specific events, or what did you really focus on, I guess, is my question, in those years, that kind of propelled you being able to take that step to sign your first pro contract?
I think it was just kind of the commitment that I was willing to put in. It was all the extra work that I was putting in on the side to try to be the best player that I could be. I think it was, you know, my junior year, the December of my junior year that I committed to Villanova. I value education pretty highly. And I would say that, you know, nowadays with the pro environment, a lot of kids don't go the college route. You know, if I was younger, I maybe wouldn't have went the college route. I'm not entirely sure, but I'm definitely happy with the decision that I took, because I got the Villanova education. I'm getting my master's right now at Georgetown. So awesome. Education was always, you know, something that was a priority for me. So kind of being able to combine, you know, the athletics at Villanova with the education and kind of that commitment of the, you know, being a student athlete, I think was a big step in just maturing as a person and kind of maturing in my soccer, academics, kind of everything overall, and giving myself time to develop as a player and get better and ultimately get to that pro contract.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't speak to being at the same level as you, Z, but talking to you and other people that have made that jump, it feels like a lot of it, yes, it is skill-based. You do become better as a player, but a lot of it is also kind of your mindset shifts, right? And you start becoming more focused, like you said, and realizing that everything has a purpose, right? Like the way you go about your day. And I think it's really worked out well for you. But so when you did make that jump from Villanova to become a professional soccer player, what was that process like as far as reaching out to an agent? Did an agent reach out to you? Did you have to go on a bunch of trials? How was that? How was that time?
Yeah, I think, you know, for people who grow up in a MLS academy, it's maybe a bit different because the union owned my rights. I wasn't draft eligible, so there was really no other option for me other than the union, which is honestly what I wanted to go to. But agent wise, I reached out to a few agents. I think Fetro hooked me up with a guy that he knew, and ultimately I ended up signing with him. Probably not the best agent, but, you know, it was able to, you know, negotiate a first contract for me. But kind of, what was it, December of the fall, right after the season ended, I got a call from the head coach of the Bethlehem Steel at the time, now Philadelphia Union 2, Brendan Burke. And he was like, yeah, we want to offer you a contract. And, you know, that's what I wanted. So I was ecstatic, and obviously signed that pretty quickly. Probably a month went by through the negotiations and whatever, and ultimately ended up signing that. But because I was owned and my rights were with the union, that was, you know, the only option for me. And, you know, I was happy that they were able to offer me a contract.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's awesome. I think it's obviously a lot different, for every player. And it's interesting to hear your perspective on it, because those that don't grow up in an MLS academy obviously have a different route. But that's super interesting. So I'm curious, and I think our listeners would be curious too. What was it like? So you signed your contract, going to Bethlehem Steel. What was it like? What was that feeling like of being a pro? What was it like stepping on the field in a pro training session for the first time? What was going through your head? And if you can remember back, 4-year career now, but how would you put that into words for everyone listening?
Yeah, you know, I think it was a really great experience. I think I was lucky to had been in a professional environment and trained with the Steel over the summers when I was with Reading, which was the PDL, now USL League 2. So I had some experience of being in a professional environment. So that kind of eased the nerves a little bit. But obviously, you know, you go in, you're the new guy, rookie. There's nerves, but you know, you guys know once you step on the field, kind of all that stuff goes away, and it's just kind of getting to what you're good at and really expressing yourself on the field. So, you know, maybe the first week, you know, preseason a little bit, those first couple games, you feel the nerves a little bit, but you know, you guys know it's once you step out there, it all goes away, and you just kind of enjoy what you've put in so much work for, and you kind of trust the process that you've put in over time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about this game, right? Is you can kind of let everything else melt away when you're out there on the field doing your thing. But Z, you mentioned you grew up or you spent 2 years in the Union Academy, and you always had that goal of, yeah, I want to play for the Steel. I want to play for the Union once I get out of Villanova. So you did sign with the Steel, but then you went through a transfer. You got transferred to the Colorado Switchbacks, which has ended up being an awesome career move for you. You're having a great season. The Switchbacks are having a great season. So it seems like everything's working out swimmingly. But how was that for you going through that transfer saga? Obviously, it's one thing to see it from afar, but to be in the middle of that and to be the player that's being transferred, how is that?
Yeah, you know, I think it's been the right move. I've been definitely very happy with it. But, you know, honestly, most of the saga probably happened after my first year. Because obviously, you know, with the Steel was a team, and then they were starting in my second year to transition to a lot of younger players, you know, not as competitive in the USL because they were moving out towards that MLS next phase. So, you know, my first year at Philly, we weren't great. A lot of losses in my second year were even worse, by a large margin. So I tried to leave after my first year and get out and, you know, go on loan somewhere else to, you know, just be in a more of a professional environment, because I was the oldest kid on the team as a second year pro, with guys who weren't pros. You know, they were academy kids that I was playing with. So I wanted to get into an environment that would, you know, challenge me more. So I tried to leave. You know, I was still under contract for my second year. They didn't let me leave. So I ended up staying my second year. And then after that, I was out of contract. So it was actually a pretty easy transition. I wasn't bought or transferred. I was a free agent, and I was, you know, free to choose where I wanted to go. And the timing worked out well that Brendan Burke, who's my coach here at the Switchbacks, was the coach at the Steel my first year. And, you know, I have a very good relationship with him. And the Switchbacks were building a brand new stadium. There was a lot of, you know, promise that was going on there. And, you know, what I've kind of learned through my 4 years so far is, you know, the people really matter. And the coaching staff that we have here at the Switchbacks is, you know, I'd argue one of the best in the entire nation, including MLS. These guys are, you know, top quality and really good people, guys that I can trust. So, you know, the biggest thing for me was going to a place that, you know, I can trust the staff and, you know, have them behind my back. And so far, you know, it's been an amazing experience. As you said, you know, we're top of the table, I think, in the West. So things are going well. But yeah, no, it was a pretty smooth transfer because of, you know, because Brendan was the coach there and I had a previously good relationship with him. So it was relatively easy and smooth. And then, you know, paperwork went through and everything was good. So it was easy, honestly.
Yeah. It's crazy how things work out like that. You know, I always learned, like, growing up, you know, building relationships is important, and, you know, you never know what's going to open up down the line, and you always got to keep a relationship with certain people, or with everyone that you meet, really, because you never know what's going to happen. And that's awesome that it worked out for you that way. But I actually want to stay on that point for a second, just regarding kind of you being the oldest player as a 2 year pro at or on a USL championship team. That's super interesting. And I think this is a trend we're seeing more and more now with this MLS Pro league being up, like, kickstarted, and a lot of MLS academies, Philly Union being, you know, a main one that prioritizes their young players a lot. And I just kind of wanted your opinion on that, how that kind of works and how that looks like comparatively. So obviously Philly Union's very, the MLS team is very successful. They're having a great season this year. They've had a great string of seasons here the last couple of years. So it seems to me a little bit like it's at the expense maybe of the second team or of the USL Championship or the MLS Pro team. So what's your opinion on that? Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah. No, I think, you know, the path that a lot of these academies have taken with, you know, really promoting their youth and putting them in professional environments earlier on. If you look at the European model, that's the exact thing that they do. So I think to produce the best pros, it's definitely the best route, you know. Just for me at my timing and what age I was at, that situation at that time was not the best for me because I was kind of, you know, past that development period. But I think, you know, for the overall American soccer landscape, it's a very positive thing. And it's, I think, the right step forward and giving kids the opportunity to train in professional environments and train with, you know, seasoned pros. You know, you're going to gain a lot of value and experience, and you're going to progress a lot quicker than you would otherwise, you know, being in the systems that we were in when we were younger. You know, our timing was just a little bit off. Maybe things would have been different if we were, you know, growing up in the environment now. But I do think it's positive for American soccer. And you can already see that coming to fruition with, you know, a lot of signings, major signings that are happening, you know, overseas with Brendan. Mark McKenzie's another one, you know, Trusty going, you know, there's a lot of Philly guys that are going abroad, and they're getting a lot of money for them. So I think, you know, you can see the value of that, you know, academy system kind of paying off already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, just like you said, I think it's definitely paying dividends, and it's really encouraging to actually see some products, right? Like you commit to a school of thought and a process, and now we're really seeing guys playing in some of the best leagues in the world. But you mentioned Brendan Aaronson and Mark McKenzie. Those are both guys that, if I'm correct, came through your current coach right now, Brendan Burke. And so, as you mentioned, you guys have one of the best staffs in the country, other switchbacks, and Brendan's a guy that's achieved a lot of audits early in his coaching career. So can you talk to that? I mean, he's one of the bright young coaches coming up in the game. What do you think, working with him day to day, why do you think that is? What are some things that make him stand out?
I think it's, you know, to harp on the relationships, I think that's, you know, a really big thing. And just kind of the staff that he's surrounded himself with are all on the same page with how they want to play, the philosophy of how they want to play. And kind of how they want to have day-to-day interactions. So, you know, everyone on the team, including the staff, is looking forward to going into work. You know, it's a very positive environment. And we all share the similar goal. We want to, you know, win championships. And I think that they do a really good job in bringing in players that not only are going to perform on the field, but are going to get along in the locker room and have that chemistry and everything. And that comes down to the recruiting they do and all the stuff behind the scenes and, you know, all the statistics that they look at and things like that. And then, you know, I think it's also, they just have a really good soccer mind, and a specific philosophy again, that they focus on. And, you know, I think if you look at a lot of successful coaches around the world, they're not switching how they're playing, you know, too frequently. You know, maybe they're adapting to different teams a little bit, but mainly they're focusing on, you know, what they're good at and continuing to do that. And I think that's what we try to do here. And we play a very specific, you know, fast styled, you know, attacking soccer that's, you know, hopefully entertaining to the public. But I think it's really just that focus that sets them apart.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I liked what you're talking about, just about, you know, chemistry between the team and a philosophy. I think you see that at every level. I mean, we see it in the college game a lot too. And I know you can relate that to that. It's tough to kind of gain that chemistry when, you know, you're changing teammates all the time, but those teams that are able to do that and those teams that are able to stick to a certain philosophy are there at the Final Four at the end. And it's super interesting to see how that works kind of in all facets of the game. But I had a question regarding just your preparation. And you kind of talked about it earlier, just in terms of, you know, your adjustment at college where, you know, you were dealing with injuries. You had to take care of, you had to learn how to take care of your body better, and things of that nature. So now that you're in year four, of your professional career, have you seen, obviously you have access to more things now, that you maybe did in the past. But have you seen kind of a shift in your preparations for matches, for training, just on a day-to-day basis? How does that look like, or what does that look like for you?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say it's so much a shift. It's more of an evolution in a way, kind of figuring out, you know, what works for me, what works for my body, what does my body specifically need? So for training, you know, it's, we get in, you know, like an hour early, get all the prehab, do all the things that, you know, my body is not or needs to be activated in, and spending a lot of time on the, on that stuff to get my body prepared for training. Cause as you guys said, you know, as you get older, your body's just not feeling as great anymore. So you need to put in the extra time. So before training, a lot of time goes in, but honestly, most of the, I would say the biggest thing is the stuff after training, the recovery after training. I do a lot of stretching. I take a lot of time to take care of my body. And then I think, you know, something that I've realized is more and more important is the sleep aspect, and making sure that you're getting the quality sleep to allow your body to recover. So that's kind of day to day throughout the week. Game days is, you know, pretty similar to how it would be before training. Just doing that before the game, you know, we go for activation walks in the morning, and just making sure that the body's right before the game and lots of rest. But you know, it's, I guess, pretty standard stuff, but you know, it's building the habits of doing the things every day that I think is the tough part. And, you know, I think it's what, like 65 days or something to build a habit. So just committing to that, and habitually doing that every day, I think is the really important part. And so far that's helped me. It's made my body feel good. And so far so good this year with no injuries, and hopefully that can continue.
Yeah, definitely. Fingers crossed. We got faith. But as Drags mentioned, you guys do have access, as you know, being a professional team, to more than you probably had access over at Villanova. So what I'm wondering is, with the influx of stats and numbers that have come into professional sports, how much does that play into the way that you guys are approaching your games and your trainings? Do you guys over at Villanova use Instat? But how much emphasis do you guys place on those numbers, as opposed to just, as you said, you guys are setting a philosophy and saying this is what we're going to do no matter what?
You know, I think it's a big part, honestly. But I wouldn't say us players get to see those numbers all the time. I think the biggest thing that the numbers help is, first of all, the recruiting aspect. So for our front office and stuff to be able to recruit players, and then kind of scouting other teams. There's a lot of numbers that go into that. So, you know, we see the final scouting report, but we don't see all the behind the scenes details of the numbers behind it. But obviously after every game for us and each training session for us, you know, we get a layout of the numbers, you know, distance covered, touches, all these sort of, simple numbers, I guess, if you want to call it that. So we see those things, but I think the more complicated stats are more behind the scenes and stuff that, you know, we don't see. It's part of, our staff's, you know, I guess, secret sauce in a way.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, numbers and statistics are just becoming more and more just essential, kind of in any sport, but mainly in soccer, we're seeing this major shift almost. I think, I mean, it's happened, I think, while I've been at Villanova, you could just see, how much emphasis is being put on it. And obviously it's at a higher level at the pro level. And that's awesome to hear, just, and it's a very interesting perspective on it. And you know, but one other thing I was curious just on this topic was, I believe you guys have been on some crazy travel stretch, right? Like away games to start the season, right?
Something like that. The entire time, it feels like.
Yeah. Like, I'm just wondering, does your staff or does the club, does Colorado Switchbacks do anything specific just to kind of I guess, ease that travel burden almost, it feels like?
I wouldn't say they do anything specific. I mean, I think the big part of it comes in kind of the preparation and training and how intense training sessions are before we travel and the week build up before that. But, you know, travel is normal. I mean, it feels like this entire season so far we've been on the road. We're away in LA this weekend. So it is tough. I think the biggest difficulty of the travel is just kind of the time away from home, and not being able to sleep in your own bed, and you know, the airplane rides, of course, are not great. But you know, it is what it is. You just got to find a way to deal with it and be resilient. And I think we have one of the best records on the road this year in the league so far. So we've been able to do a good job of kind of adapting to the different environments, but I think that really kind of stems from the preparation in the week before and how we train and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'd imagine, like you said, there's definitely some planning that goes into it. I'm sure, you know, when you have a stretch of road games coming up, and how would you guys tackle that? So you said, obviously you guys prepare a lot the week before an away game, or maybe back-to-back away games, you'll be on the road. So what goes into that? Coach is saying, okay, we're going to be gone for the next 2 weeks, let's say, for example. What would that entail for you guys as a squad?
I mean, I think not much difference in the actual training schedule. Maybe a day off, an extra day off or something after we travel. It's really more in the intensity of the sessions, and kind of how much they want to put on our legs in that week to what they think will make us have our legs feel good for the weekend. So it's really, I guess, the intensity of the training that week that really kind of determines the preparation.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's interesting because it varies, I think, from program to program in college and how different coaches handle it in the professional ranks. But I think sticking to a routine, as you're mentioning, is super important in its own light. And I think it benefits the players too, because I'm a player that doesn't like a lot of change. I like to stick to it. I'm very disciplined. I like to stick to a certain routine. So I think that's awesome. But so we obviously heard your whole story, and it's an awesome story, starting at Union Academy, going to Bethlehem Steel, now at Colorado Switchbacks. So now that you reached your goal since you were a young kid, of being a pro, I'm wondering, what is something that you wish you knew when you were a young player, maybe even before you went to Philly Union, if you want to do it that way? What did you wish you knew, and what would you tell someone that has those same aspirations now?
You know, I think that's a good question. It's a tough question. But I think it's the dedication that you have to put in, the time commitment that you have to put in. And I think the biggest thing is, you guys will know, the sacrifices that you have to make to be able to be, you know, a really good player in any sport. It's being okay with, you know, sacrificing a lot of different things, a lot of social things that, you know, you might miss out on, but kind of realizing in the end that, you know, if you do put in that time and that work, it's going to be worth it in the end. So, you know, I think if I had to say to a young kid or something, first of all, you got to work hard. I think that's the foundation of everything. And I know, I think a lot of people think that they work hard, but really committing to working harder than every single person next to you. For myself, you know, I'm not physically gifted. I'm small. I'm like 5'6". I'm not a freak athlete. So I had to put a lot of time in, and a lot of credit goes to my dad for bringing me out and training extra. So I think, you know, it's cliche and everything that people say, hard work, but, you know, really committing to the hard work, and then realizing you're going to have to sacrifice. There's going to be a lot of sacrifices, but, you know, it'll be worth it in the end.
Yeah. Well, I also think it's invaluable to hear a guy like you say it, because I think it's something you realize when you become a junior or senior in college. And for a lot of people, you know, that can be towards the end of your career if you're not so fortunate and so talented to go pro. So hopefully people are able to listen when they're younger, if we have any younger listeners, and they can hear a professional soccer player say that right now, because having that realization at a young age and being able to go out, you know, with your dad or by yourself, I think it would make a big difference in the big picture.
Absolutely.
But I mean, that's invaluable information, Z. Thanks for sharing all that. And now we're going to move on to biggest winners and biggest losers within the past week of soccer. It's a little slower with the international break going on. Just had a pretty hectic week last week, obviously, with Prem and the Champions League and everything going on there. But Drags, do you want to start us off with your biggest winner of the week?
Yeah. So this was tough, as Dill mentioned. But I think my biggest winner I have to give a shout out to Gareth Bale this week. And it's about what he did with Wales this week, but it's also about the type of player he is. So I just remember, like, when I was a young kid, I don't remember how old I was, but the goal against, I believe it was Barcelona, where the man just like ran out of bounds and still makes it to goal and scores. Like, I still remember that goal as just a legendary goal of all time. But you got to think about Bale's career, and this is why he's my biggest winner. You think what he did this past week. He just took Wales to the World Cup as a captain for the first time, and I think it was 64 years. He took Wales to the Euro semifinal. And he, before he joined Real Madrid, they had won 0 Champions Leagues in 11 years. And since he's joined the club, they've won 5 in the last 8 years. And these stats just blow my mind. I think he's a very, like, a generally respected player, but I think he is honestly a legend of the game. And I don't think he gets enough respect. So I just want to give him a shout out this week as my biggest winner.
Yeah, I think that's a great one, especially with all the slander he gets at Madrid in that city. I mean, there's videos of his car being, you know, mobbed on the way out of games, and all he's done is go there and win trophies. He scored the goal in the Champions League finals. I mean, one of the greatest goals literally in Champions League history, the bicycle kick. And I think, yeah, I think he deserves the credit. I think it was absolutely heartbreaking to see Ukraine go out like that. Absolutely heartbreaking to see Yarmolenko be the guy that has to take that burden of the own goal after all the amazing work that he's done as a Ukrainian, not as a footballer, but as a Ukrainian. Helped a lot of his Ukrainian teammates in mainland Europe get their family out. And so he obviously deserves a ton of respect and credit for that, but that's sports. And congratulations to Wales, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. I meant to mention that as well, because I think it's an important disclaimer, because Ukraine was the world's team in that game, but didn't go their way. It's just a game of football. So, but yeah.
Z, what about you, man?
I think I gotta stick with my hometown Philly and say Brendan Aaronson's the biggest winner with his, what was it, $30 million move to Leeds. I think that's been coming for a while. I think, what was it, the last transfer window, you kind of saw that Leeds was interested, but I guess the money wasn't there at the time. But you know, I'm happy for him, for the entire Philadelphia Union organization, because they should get some money for that, I think, as well. So that's good for them, and you know, I hope he does well there. He's a great player, and you know, hopefully he can perform for the U.S. men's national team as well, and really, you know, make an impact at the World Cup. And, you know, I think he will. And I think he'll be very successful at Leeds, and, you know, hopefully he can bring them up the table and not have them battling for relegation, but maybe, you know, battling for some European competition.
Yeah, for sure. It's an awesome one.
Yeah. And he gets to go play with another American, Jesse Marsh, too. So that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That they get to team up. And like you said, I think success for them would go a long way as like a little American duo over there in the Premier League.
Yeah, I think Jesse Marsh, you know, being an American coach, I think what Bob Bradley was the last one with Swansea, and that did not go too well. So it's nice to see, you know, an American coach, you know, having another time in the Premier League, and hopefully it's a lot more successful this time.
Right. Yeah, he did the job this season, and that's
absolutely.
Yeah, Dale, what about you?
Yeah, It wasn't an easy job either that he did. I think, yeah. I think he
actually did a pretty good job. Tough.
Yeah. My winner, I was in between two. I'm just going to give a small shout out to Pogba for getting out of United. I'm a Manchester United fan, but just good for his career. But that's not going to be my big winner. My big winner is going to be Jose Mourinho, who once again won a European competition. I know some people might go and say, oh, it was a conference league. It's still a European competition. By the end of it, once you got to the quarterfinals, it was pretty big clubs all competing, all putting their first teams out there. And it was a trophy that meant a lot to him, to the club, to the players. So everyone really cared. He was in tears at the end. And I just think it's a fantastic accomplishment. Not to make it all about the coach, it's a player's game, but I think it's fifth European trophy, and it's obviously with another team. And I think it's just remarkable that once again, he's gone out, and it might not always be the prettiest soccer, but he's produced the winner.
Yeah, exactly. And I was going to say the same thing because, and going along with that, I think because he doesn't have the prettiest philosophy or style, he gets, especially in the last, I don't know, 5 years, he's been disrespected a lot, I think. And it's definitely not deserved. Just looking at his, you know, his coaching career in general. So that's a great mention though.
Yeah, he gets results no matter what. Every place he goes, he ends up winning. So makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess I'll kick us off with the biggest loser as well. So this was a tough one as well. But I'm worried about Juve, Juventus. And there's a lot of rumor buzz going around this past week because they've been heavily linked with Angel Di Maria making a move from PSG. That link is faltering. It's not 100%. It's not likely that he ends up going there. And they've also been in the wake linked with Berardi as well, making a return to the club. And you know, Berardi's a good move, but the reason they're a big loser for me is you know, the last two seasons, I mean, they were at the peak of Serie A, but kind of dominant in the league in a way. And last two seasons obviously didn't win the title. And after losing Ronaldo, it seems as though they've never got kind of back on track. And I'm looking for just his, like, since I've been alive, I'm looking for like a superstar going to Juve next. And, you know, an aging Di Maria, I don't know if that's the solution for them. And so that's kind of why they're my biggest loser. I'm just worried about them for next season and going forward, if they can't get that superstar that they've traditionally gotten.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw Di Maria is linked with Barcelona now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Barcelona fan, and I don't know if I want that because, as you say, he's a bit older. But, you know, hopefully we'll see where he ends up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, when you look at Juve, Dybala, I think, is on the way out as well. Mm-hmm. He's been a steadying force for them basically for a while. I think maybe, you know, he's been a key part of that team. So yeah, I thought when they got Vlahovic, it would patch up some of the leakage there for a little bit. I think he's still a really promising young striker, but they need something. They need a guy that you can say will go out and win them games. I think McKennie's also rumored to be going somewhere else, potentially Spurs. I think that would be pretty cool to see. But yeah, Juve are definitely looking for a spark. And mm-hmm. I don't know if I see it right now. Yeah,
I'm not sure Pogba's the answer either.
Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Hopefully not. As a United fan, that would be pretty painful to see, but
he'll succeed. You just wished somehow. Him luck, though. You just wished him luck going forward.
I'm happy for him. I do wish him success. It would just be a little painful to see, but I'm still rooting for him.
Yeah.
What about you?
So my biggest loser, you know, I think it's tough as there's not a whole lot going on in the soccer world. So just a recent game, the the Belgium Poland game. So I'd say Poland's my biggest loser. You know, again, smack 6-1. It's never looks good, no matter the players on the field. That's a tough loss, no matter who you are in the soccer world. Getting 6 goals conceded, that hurts. That really hurts.
Right. Yeah. And you got to think like, I mean, most of these teams, most of these international teams that are competing in the UEFA Nations League and competing in international friendlies, there's probably 5-6 games to the World Cup left because of the, you know, obviously it's in the winter, so it's unique. And so all these games matter in a way. It's squad selection. It's a lot of things that go into these games. You know, there's been a lot of, you know, Dylan's going to get into it, but like a lot of, you know, things going on with maybe some of the big players not taking the Nations League serious, but these games are important and you never want to see a 6-1 result if you're Poland, right? Because I mean, they're going to the World Cup, they need to get momentum and they're running out of time to do it. So
yeah, and honestly, just to add insult to injury, I think they're up 1-0 in that game.
Yeah they were
makes it even worse, an even worse scoreline. And yeah, I mean, you got obviously they're not going to be probably the number one team in the world, but they still have Lewandowski. They still have players like Glick, who are Champions League players, and Zielinski, and Szczesny. So they have really good players. I mean, they have players that will not be expecting to lose 6-1. And I'm sure there's going to be a bit of a reckoning in the locker room, whether it be from the coach or some of the leaders in the locker room. But also, it kind of shows you how the Nations League is being looked at right now. And that ties into my biggest loser of the week, which is the UEFA Nations League. So it's on a couple different fronts that I think it's the biggest loser. The first is how the players are looking at it. So Kevin De Bruyne came out. He said he doesn't really get the point of it. He said that he sees it as a glorified friendly and he doesn't really care. You could tell today, if you're watching the game that Z was talking about, a couple guys scored, didn't really celebrate. So that's the first problem, is that the league is trying to operate as some sort of international tournament, and it's just not being regarded that way by the players. And then the second front that I have a complaint with the Nations League is now they're not making it available to the casual fan to watch. You got to sign up for Fubo TV. And I'm personally not going to buy an entirely new subscription just to watch the UEFA Nations League. So it's just, you know, for me, this is a place to vent, making my biggest loser. It's frustrating me this week. And I just think, as Drag said, it does provide a function for these teams in their pre-World Cup setups. But when you're looking at the tournament or what they're trying to get, it's not the players don't see it as that, the fans don't see it as that. So it's just glorified friendly to me.
Yeah.
I kind of see like the Nations League and, you know, FIFA with the World Cup and the Super League, all these, you know, organizations are trying to make more and more games, it seems like, for these players to play in. Obviously there's the economic benefit of it, but I mean, I think the Nations League is, as you said, though, is a good example of, you know, players aren't going to take it as seriously. I don't know what that's going to translate towards like the entertainment aspect of it. If fans are going to watch it, I didn't even know it was on Fubo. I mean, I feel like I got 10 subscriptions to watch every league in the world. I got like right. Paramount. I got, you know, Peacock. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. How many things I got to get to watch just like one game in one league. So I think that's kind of also, you know, another problem, but I think, you know, they're trying to make too many games happen for these guys who are already playing like 70 games a season. It's tough on players. They get no breaks. It's pretty crazy, honestly.
Yeah, I was literally just thinking, like, in terms of the breaks, like, I don't know when the Prem's official start date, but it's like late July, early August. Like, I'm thinking, like, these guys have games till this upcoming Tuesday and have a month of holiday. Like, that's crazy. Like, these guys, like, I don't even know, like, Andy Robertson, Trent Alexander-Arnold played, like, 68 to 70 games, as you mentioned. Like, that's just absurd to me in a calendar, like, in a year, in a season. Like, that's just crazy. And also, Dill, I'll take this time to vent as well, just about a specific event about the streaming services. We have Germany, England yesterday. And the biggest game of the day has been on FS1 every day. And I tune into FS1 to watch, you know, Germany, England. And It's not on FS1. I forget what was on there. Maybe NASCAR or something of that nature. And I wasn't too happy to put it that way, that I had to get a free subscription to Fubo TV to watch England versus Germany. So just to add on to your point, but
yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just too much. It's just too much. Too many subscriptions, like Z said, too many games. It's just overdoing it. And we'll see what they do. We'll see if they keep it going or if they go back to friendlies. It should be interesting. I mean, then you have like America playing, I don't know, it's one of the Virgin Islands on Friday or, you know, some, what's going to go on with that? Are we going to put the first 11 out there? Yeah, we'll see. But last segment of the episode is spin the wheel. It's going to spin the wheel of the five major European leagues. And whatever it lands on, just talk about the most interesting thing that comes to mind with that league. As if you were next to a fan at a game and the game was delayed. So we cited the Champions League final last week with the 30-minute delay. So imagine you're sitting there and you just got to talk to them about something. So, all right, got a good one. We got the Premier League, if anything comes to mind with you two guys.
I think first thing for me would just be kind of Man City and the, you know, with Haaland and how they're going to kind of line up and how impactful Haaland's going to be. And, you know, he's, I think, one of the best young strikers in the world. He's got a great goal scoring record. I think it's, you know, Man City's been kind of needing that. They haven't had like a true number nine that is a goal scoring threat consistently. So I think Haaland kind of, you know, gets that for them. And, you know, obviously they're already one of the best teams in the world. To add a player like that, it's going to be real interesting talking point for next year and see how dominant they could be.
Yeah. Love it, Zee. Absolutely. I'm nomping at the bits right now to add on to that as a City fan. I love it.
Oh, City fan. Oh, man.
I love it, Zee. Yeah. But no, like I'm interested. I love that point because I think, you know, depending on who you're talking to, but some people don't think Haaland's going to translate well into Pep's style. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch. I'm very intrigued to watch because as we've seen with players that enter the City system, enter the system under Pep, guys like Cancelo, guys like Jack Grealish this past season that really haven't had as much success as they had, you know, at previous clubs or at an international level. So it's interesting to see how he's going to translate into that City system. You know, another guy on that topic that I'm very interested to see how it pans out is Alvarez coming from Boca Juniors. And I'm not really sure the deal. They might be loaning him out for a season. But I think he's a very, very special talent. I'm interested to see how that pans out as well.
Yeah. I think there's always an adjustment period when players come to the Prem, especially like playing under a guy like Pep, who's got so many tactical, you know, nuances throughout his teams. And you mentioned Cancelo. I think when he first got there, he didn't really have that big of an impact. But I mean, you saw this year, one of the best right backs in the Prem, maybe the entire world. He was, you know, very impactful, whether he was playing on the right or the left. I think Grealish will be a lot better next year too. So maybe Haaland comes in, he's not super impactful right away, but I think Pep, because he's such a good coach, will be able to, you know, to get him to be impactful. However long that may take, I have no idea, but I think it'll eventually happen.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, I was going to say something along similar lines. Another guy you could look at in that light is Mahrez, who initially didn't have the most success.
For sure.
And I think he might have even had their most goal contributions this season. He was up there, so key player. Just the one point I want to make on that topic is, obviously it scares me as a United fan, but more just looking at it from a league-wide perspective, it's been a two-horse race the past year and a half, maybe you could even say 2 years. And I hope that it doesn't continue that trend. I hope that, obviously, City will still probably be one of the top teams in the league, but I hope we can get back to like a big six or a top four where you know, it's more than just a two-team race towards the end of the league. But can't really
you complain. Think that's possible
Not this year. Nah.
Definitely not this year.
I hope for it, but no. not. I mean, maybe if Mane leaves and Salah's, I've heard there's some links of Barcelona there. So maybe Liverpool could get weakened, but then that would really just make it a one horse race. So, you know.
I saw Liverpool is rumored with Darwin Nunez, the was he Benfica?
Yeah, Benfica,
I believe.
Benfica,
yeah.
Benfica striker. So, I mean, Mane is pretty much out, it seems. So,
yeah.
But that seems like a good signing as well. So,
I know.
Yeah, I don't know, man. We'll see. I don't see Chelsea or Arsenal or Tottenham.
No.
Really coming close to. I didn't even mention United, dudes. I'm sorry, but
we're not in the conversation right now. I'm not mad about it.
Maybe if they give Ten Hag some time and some players, maybe. But you know,
we're West Ham winning at Brighton away from being in the Conference League, so I'm not complaining.
I'm just gonna sit back in my chair and have faith in a one horse race for years to come. not to go down that path, but you know.
Yeah, it's all right, man.
enjoy while it lasts, Drags. It won't be forever.
Yeah, it's fair enough.
But a while.
Well, yeah. This was awesome. So yeah, thanks a lot again, Z, for coming on today. And sharing your soccer journey with us and all our listeners. And we're going to wrap up today's episode now. So be sure to hit that subscribe button on our page and download this episode. And also check out Around the World on YouTube. The link will be in the description of this podcast. Again, thanks for tuning in, everyone. And we'll catch you next week on Around the World.